Hi, HR Nation. Welcome back to another episode of the HR Leaders Podcast, the show where we explore the future of work with industry experts and HR executives from the world's leading global brands. Today, we're joined by Seren Baramoglu, Vice President of People Excellence, Talent and Reward at Mölnlycke. Welcome to the show. How are you?
Thank you. I'm good. Very happy to be here today.
Very bright and vibrant today. I love it.
Yeah, I like red.
Me too. But sometimes on camera when I'm sitting here, I stand out too much.
I hope I don't stand out too much today.
Listen, it's a good thing to stand out. Don't worry about that.
All right.
First and foremost, congratulations on a new role. How are you settling in?
Thank you. I'm actually settling quite well. It's been already 7 months in the role for me. And I joined my company in a complete virtual setting. I mean, from the recruitment to my onboarding and to my settling in, I think for 4 to 5 months in the role, I haven't seen anyone in person. But now, good that after vaccination and all what's going on in the world, I started traveling finally. And it's made, of course, huge difference in the last couple of months.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. How do you describe your role to people that are listening?
Absolutely. So for the people outside of the HR function, I say we are the engineers of HR. So just to explain what it means, like we are the R&D of HR. So what I, of course, for the ones who are in the function knows that I am leading all of the center of expertise areas, ranging from total rewards, talent learning, talent acquisition, all of that. So I'm leading all of the center of expertise space. And then me and my team are responsible for putting the right programs, processes, policies, all what is required to perform your people duties well.
Fantastic. And I think I asked you this beforehand, but you know, I'd love to ask it again for everyone listening. What was it about this role that attracted you to join the business?
Yeah. So I think there were two pieces. One was the company itself. You know, when I heard about Mölnlycke's vision, which is improving the lives of the patients, it really touched me, especially while we were in the middle of the, pandemic period. I really felt like being close to healthcare industry made a lot of sense for me. But then the second is that with the job that I would have in this company, I know that I would make a lot of impact on people processes. And I really believe in the part that people play in the success of a company. So then I thought this might be a place that I can make real impact to the results.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Fantastic. Was this a new function when you came into the business that they built from the ground up, or was it pre-existing?
No, it was pre-existing. So I had a predecessor before me. It existed before. This is actually quite similar to what I have done previously in Whirlpool as well. But that was a regional role. This is a global role.
All right. It's a whole new world. So what's the last 8 months look like for you then?
Well, it was such a journey. I think I kind of found myself in my already first week completely like in the game and delivering. So my onboarding has been quite a short one. I say short, but we still did a very proper onboarding. I mean, thanks to Martin, who's my manager. I think he did a very good job, but then I had to perform as I get onboarded. So we went through an organization change. We had to implement a couple of new initiatives, a couple of new programs. So it's been such a journey. I think now the way I explain is that we're really on a roll now.
Nice. Talk about some of the programs or initiatives that you're working on that you're most excited about that you can share with our listeners.
Yeah. I mean, you know, a couple of things. So for instance, lately, we are looking at closely at how we can embed the right culture and capabilities that's going to take our business to the next level. And when I say that, because I'm leading all of the center of expertise spaces, this has a meaning for all of them, from total rewards to learning to talent acquisition. So what I'm really looking at is that what is that right culture and what are those right capabilities And then how do I embed them into each human resources program that we have? This is what excites me for 2022. But if I look at 2021, I mean, we're looking at a new incentive program. We're looking at revising our high performance behaviors, which is equivalent of values that you see in other companies. And then we're looking at like, how can we achieve succession planning excellence, so on and so forth. So many exciting projects.
Yeah. When you mentioned the learning culture and the capability piece, walk us through that journey. You know, how did you get started? What were some of the challenges that you faced? And then sort of the journey to where you are now.
Actually, we are really in the beginning of that journey. And then where it all came is that, like, when we do our annual planning, we always start from hearing the business, right? Mm-hmm. So I always like to hear, you know, what are the priorities, what is the strategy? And then a common theme that I have heard from all of our business partners is that we really need to work on the right culture and the right capabilities. And that gave me a lot of confidence that this is the right priority for next year. Again, we are very early on in that journey. So I can say that we are in the process of like putting the business case together, choosing maybe the right suppliers, right methodology. And then I think in a short period of time, we should be able to, you know, ready to go.
Yeah. Have you already sat down with a team and identified some of those core capabilities that you feel that you're going to need in the future?
You mean what the core capabilities would look like?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, a couple of them are obvious. So, for instance, digitalization, the way we look at sustainability, these are the two things that are coming to my mind. Mm-hmm. Or being more data savvy, being able to use the data in a meaningful way, not only reporting and leaving them aside, but doing something with them.
Yeah.
These are the first three that is, you know, on the top of my head. Of course, there are more to that.
Yeah. Because you mentioned also before about you're revising your high performance behaviors, right? Is that something you're still in the process of as well? Or have you already kind of gone through that?
It is in the process. It is in the process. And again, what we are doing there is that we have high performance behaviors in place. And I think they have been really future proof. So we have really good set of high performance behaviors that we've been using consistently across the company. Mm-hmm. But now what we are doing is, together with our leadership team, we are looking at them once again to see if it is really reflecting our strategy and where we want to be. So still in the process, and I think we'll get that down before the end of the year.
Yeah, you're pretty busy then.
Indeed, but it's fun. Love it.
Yeah, I know something you're really passionate about is making sure that all of the functions work hand in hand under one umbrella. Why is that so important? And what's the challenge in making that happen?
Well, you know, like, I don't think that my role is a very common one, right? Like, because if you go to the industry, you will see, you know, heads of total rewards, then you would see heads of learning, heads of talent, right? So there are not so many people who are leading the whole space, like all of the COEs. So it's in a way unique. And I think I'm lucky that I had the, you know, those experiences now that I'm able to lead them as well. I've seen the benefit of it myself, both in my previous role and this role. Let's say that you are leading a global mobility function, right?
Yeah.
That global mobility function needs to have a direct link with the talent function. So if you're really leading that space, you need to understand, you know, what is the right return on investment? Who are we investing in it? Like, why are we making these global mobility decisions? So, for instance, that is talent and global mobility integration. Or thinking about total rewards. I think total rewards, when you're putting your total reward strategy, you need to understand your nine box, right? Like, who are your top talent? You know, who is in your succession? Do you have the right total rewards proposition for them? So on and so forth. So I believe every single function inside HR is connected with one another. And if you have a visibility on all of them, that's a huge advantage because then you can always see around the corners.
Why is it, why do you think this is not a more common practice then in organizations?
I think it's a matter of like finding the right profile, right? Like if you go out and look for a person who can lead all, then most probably you want to look for an experience for all of them. And I'm not sure if this exists. So maybe this is one reason. And then the other reason could be that because of the size of the company, it would not be possible for a single person to lead all of them. So one maybe can be with the size of the company, and then the other would be because, you know, you don't have a lot of profiles out in the market who kind of had the experience in all those areas.
Yeah, no, I agree. I know one of the other projects you've worked on in the past, and I know you could share a lot of value on this, is how you've turned succession planning from a sort of paper exercise to being embedded every day into the business. Could you walk us through that journey and how you did that?
Absolutely. And you know, that is something that I really, you know, remember well from my previous experience. So basically what we have done there is that in the beginning, of course, we have identified the why, the how, and the what of the succession planning, right? There has been, of course, a lot of training going into it. We talked about the principles. I mean, principles such as, you know, not only focusing on who can do the role, but focusing on who should do the role, being very intentional about succession planning, making sure that the leaders have full ownership of the succession plans. You know, there were many like small cultural changes that we had to work on, but eventually, I think the success came from the fact that we had a very nice bottom-up talent planning cycle that was fully owned by our people leaders. And because this was owned by them, and because our leadership also show a lot of attention to it, I think in the end we come a long way to make it a very decent exercise.
What was the common mistakes that you see that most companies make?
I think like two things I can say. One is that I think we do the review and then we close the chapter and sometimes wait for next year for the next review. And I think this is the biggest mistake. But if you really keep that paper in front of you all year long, and if you can take that paper as a reference for all your talent decisions, then I think, you know, the odds of failing is much lower. So you need make it like year-round exercise, not only one-time exercise. That is one. And then the other one, I think we can all improve our muscles is not only the planning, but also doing something with those plans to put the right development plans in place for people and following up on those development plans so that they are ready when the time comes. Because sometimes what happens is that we have those succession plans, then the time comes, role is open, and then we realize all of a sudden that we don't feel comfortable with the people that we have put in the succession plan once. Why? Because most probably we didn't do the right developmental planning and actioning.
Why does that happen so often?
I think we go with the flow of the daily business. And sometimes we prioritize the necessities, like what I said about like who can do the job. Oh, this guy I will put and this guy will perform from day zero. So this is a much safer bet for me rather than putting in a person whom I know I need to develop in the role, right? So I think those quick decisions, you know,
It's more work, basically, right? It's more work.
I think I always refer to the Daniel Kahneman's book, Thinking Fast and Slow. I think with talent planning, we need to learn how to think slow because sometimes we think fast. And I do the same too, by the way.
Yeah,
Like
this episode of the HR Leaders Podcast was brought to you by our friends at Achievers. 2/3 of employees have 1 foot out the door in 2024, and the top reason to job hunt? Better compensation. But money isn't everything. The Achievers 2024 Engagement and Retention Report reveals that employees crave emotional salary too. What does emotional salary mean? And what are the ways to increase emotional salary to engage and retain top talent? Learn more about motivating your employees beyond just pay by visiting achievers.com/HR leaders. Again, that's achievers.com/HR leaders. Let's get back to the episode.
We all do. Yeah.
So I think we need to learn how to think slow, how to think intentionally when it comes to talent planning, succession planning.
Yeah. Why is it so important as well to have the leaders own this?
Oh, I mean, because if you don't have the leaders on it, then it's going to be a paper-based exercise, because who's going to, you know, take those measures to develop those people, right? Who's going to take those measures to make those decisions? So that's why I strongly believe leaders owning this is 50% defining the success of the succession planning.
Yeah.
Because they're the ones to execute, right?
What advice would you give to leaders about how to approach this with their, with your colleagues, of how to approach this with those leaders?
I think first things first, like if we can all settle with the right philosophy, with the right approach, right? Then we are all on the same page. So this is number one. Number two, I think we need to shake hands from the beginning about the amount of time we will require for this exercise. I know that like leaders are busy, we don't have time, and sometimes it's demanding. But if we can really convince them about the outcome, and if we can agree and shake hands on the amount of time we will spend on those reviews, then I think, you know, we will achieve to work much closer with them going forward. But you need to really like agree from the beginning.
Yeah. What did that look like from a practical perspective? Was it you sitting down with them one-on-one? Like, what did that look like?
Yeah, you mean the reviews themselves or convincing them?
Both. Let's say convincing them, because I'm sure an element of that is, what does it mean to them? You know, why am I doing this?
I think it's just what was not me, right? Like, first I had to convince our, you know, people community itself. Like, I say people because we call HR people function in Mölnlycke. Mm-hmm. So I had to convince our people business partners first, you know, explain them the methodology, why we do it, how we do it, what are our KPIs, where do we want to get to, how are we going to define success. And then after that, they were so influential in getting the, you know, support of their leaders or getting their leaders on board. Of course, I did some work to speak with these leaders, but I can only do it if, you know,
of course,
my partners who are our business partners are believing in the cause as much as I do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, of course. You need to get it. Oh, you mentioned KPIs. That's super interesting. What are some of the KPIs that you measure?
Yeah, I mean, like a couple of KPIs. Of course, you need to look at your, like, do you have, what's your succession plan, let's say? We used to call them by color. So you have green succession plans, orange succession plans, red succession plans, depending on the number of people that you have in each, let's say, year time frame. So of course, the percentage of those is one thing. Second one, metric that I really like, you know, we do talent assessment, right? Like, so we define who is high potential, who is well-placed, and who can grow, etc. So I always look at, like, are those numbers or are those people in line with the succession plan? So meaning, are the high potential people that we define as high potential part of the succession plans? Because if they are not part of the succession plans, either your talent assessment is wrong or your organization design is not allowing people to grow, right? Like, I love this I love this KPI that we used to measure a lot. Other than that, for instance, I look at how much of a good job we do with early bets. So do we have early bets? Do we define early bets? Not only ready now, ready 1-3, ready 3-5, but ready 5+. So do we have them? And I think that was a important measure. And other than that, like leaving succession plan aside, do we have the pipeline? Meaning like how many director plus potential I have compared with the director plus roles that I have in the organization. Is it 2 times that, 3 times that? So that is another measure. And then I guess the other measure that we need to improve and work on is the existence of the development plans. So do we have development plans for our people?
Yeah, it's very interesting. I know you're early on the stage in this organization, but if you can, let me know. But maybe in a previous company as well, what technology have you used to help support this?
Well, it's a work in progress. I think we can do of a better job when it comes to our using our systems to support us with ease, right? And I kind of think still we are dependent on, Excel and PowerPoint and all of that, because my vision is really to be able to push a button, and that button should generate my annual talent planning to our leaders, right? So the succession plans, the development plans, the talent pipeline, and calculating them automatically. I think we have some work to do there. And I think all the systems that are available out there has the capabilities to do them. But I think, these can be improved because today there is still a lot of manual work going in this. I can.
You're right. There are a lot of tools out there, but they're like kind of bolt-ons to a larger kind of focus tool, which doesn't give you exactly what you need.
Exactly.
What projects are you most excited about that are coming up in the next few months?
I'm really excited about this capabilities work, and I'm really also excited about the culture work, meaning like how are we going to embed the right culture and capabilities in our organization. And of course that is mostly building the right learning culture to achieve this. That really excites me. Other than that, I think this is really like I must say number one. But then also the other one would be that we would like to look at our employee value proposition and to make it much more clear both for our internal like our employees, so to say, or our external potential employees, that what do we stand for? What differentiates us? Because I really believe there are a lot that differentiate us from others. Now it's just a matter of putting it out there with the right words and putting it out there with the right channels so that it can reach to the people that we would like to see in our organization.
Definitely. No, and I think now more than ever, it's so important. How has the last sort of 18 months shaped your decision making around those two areas you just mentioned?
No, like what I have learned in the last 18 months, I mean, of course, my ways of working has shifted and changed. I mean, previously you would see me in the office 5 times a day. Like I would go every single day, although I didn't have to, but I really kind of was used to it, right? But now I kind of think like this hybrid approach is giving me and my team a lot of edge and flexibility so that we can focus on our work and programs when we need to. But at the same time, if we are together in the office, we know that we are not there only just to sit in our cubicles or rooms or wherever we are. We are there to, work together, build together. And I think that is a big shift to say, like, I think we kind of remember the importance of creating together, right? Because the times that we are together is so limited. And now when we are together, we know that we need to make the most of it.
Yeah, no, you're
So,
right. Yeah. What do you think are some of the biggest opportunities that have come out of this period for organizations?
I think, you know, there are certain concepts that we didn't think about and talk about before, such as well-being, like mental well-being, right? So these are the things that we kind of ignored, I think, previously, but then these came to life. And I think we learned how important it is to take care of that human part, not only managing your projects, your business, or your priorities, but I know that I may be repeating what is said out there already, but I really truly believe in it. Like, I think we learned to see the person as a whole and to, you know, go above and beyond for our employees to meet their needs as a whole. Not only as, you know, people that we see in the office, they come, go, they do their projects, we assess them. Not only that, like, we need to see people as a whole.
Yeah, that was very apparent, right? That and many people turn to their organizations for help and for guidance, support.
Yeah.
And it is a bigger responsibility outside of just being an employer. Where someone comes to do work, you know,
and you know, also the boundaries are now different, right? Like, for instance, previously you might have a problem with your kids at home, and then this is something that you deal with, right? But now just the boundaries are so blurry, and I think, you know, considering the fact that our employees spend the majority of their time with us, I think we need to find ways to help them beyond their work with us.
Mm-hmm.
Like, can we help them with challenges that they have with their families? And well, of course, it's limited what we can do, but can we still do something about it? I mean, this is just like what is coming to my mind nowadays.
Oh, 100%. Even like one of the partners I recently spoke with was Varsity Tutors. So they do tutoring to help families with their children's tutoring. Because, you know, everyone was at home and schools were closed, but also just as an additional benefit now, they've continued. So many companies are now signed with Varsity Tutors to provide that as an additional benefit. And you would not have seen something like that in the past of, oh, my company provides tutoring for my children. That wouldn't have been commonplace whatsoever. So, we've also realized that when it comes to the benefits piece, that there's no longer this one size fits all, and we need to create a bespoke offering for each employee, depending on their needs, their stage in their life, what that may look like. The same way we do that for our customers, we need to do that for our employees. So there's been so much shifts happening.
And you know, like, that also impacted, for instance, the way we look at D&I as well.
Mm-hmm.
Call it D&I, or, you know, in there are different abbreviations now. Previously, we were just looking at it from the point of view of, okay, gender, age, maybe nationality, mm-hmm. maybe race, right? But now it's just we learned that we need to, again, look people as a whole, and then they maybe have, you know, seven different dimensions.
Of course.
Not only one dimension, because then you might have a female with two kids, and you might have another colleague like taking care of their family, you know. We need to look at it from a multi-dimension point of view, and I think the emphasis over time needs to shift from not only maybe, you know, grouping people in certain dimensions, but understanding more the differences of every single person, because maybe I have six different dimensions, you have eight different dimensions, and then how can we bring this real inclusion in the workplace?
Mm-hmm.
I think, like, I sometimes think, like, I hope we tackle the diversity challenge soon, so that we put all our effort in the inclusion rather, But I know we are not there from diversity point of view.
Yeah. No, I'm with you. We've got a lot of work to do. Before I let you go, I want to jump into our quick fire round. So I'm going to ask you five questions. You probably know this is already coming already. So you have no longer than 30 seconds to give us amazing answers. Are you ready?
Yes, I
All
am.
right. What was the number one thing that was holding you back from becoming a senior executive?
Well, I remember at the time when, I was putting myself very rigid timelines to say, okay, I have to do this 3 years, 3 years, 3 years. And then when the opportunity came to me earlier than I planned, I had a bit of a shock to say, am I ready for that? And then my mentor at the time said, go for it. You are ready for that. So I think that was the only time that I was a bit rigid with myself.
Like the imposter syndrome.
Yeah, it's okay.
What's the best piece of business advice you've ever received?
Oh, yeah. I think the best advice is that I've been told by one of our senior executives. He said, know your numbers. Doesn't matter where you work, what you do, know your numbers. If you're an HR, like, know your key numbers because you don't know who you're going to come across and where you're going to use the data. This is so important. Know your numbers. And I give this advice to all my mentees now.
Yeah, you don't want to get caught out, right?
Yeah.
No,
helps too,
of
by the
course.
way.
Yeah, I'm only joking. Yeah, of course. What's one book do you recommend to our audience and why?
Well, I really like this book called Time, Talent, and Energy. I think this is one of the best books written about talent and how to manage talent in a company. And then the other one that I recommend to especially the mentees that I have who are in their maybe 9 to 10 year of work life. What got you here won't get you there. It's an old book, I know, but that's just such a meaningful book because that tells you about the fact that like what you have done so far made you successful doesn't mean that it will make you successful in the future. So that's a little shift
Yeah,
there.
you have to continue to innovate and reinvent. Otherwise, you will get disrupted. Otherwise, what about some online resources? If we go to your web browser, what are your sort of go-to sites in terms of your learning and development? Where do you spend time?
Yeah, I mean, I have the Harvard Business Review app, so I read it a lot. I use Blinkist, these short book summaries that I really love. And then I read a lot from McKinsey as well. So like I really love to start my day with reading like one or two articles a morning, and it really like gives me a fresh look every time.
Yeah, and a diverse range of perspectives and from those different sites as well.
And then it keeps you up to date. Yeah.
Fantastic. What's one thing about the current business that you're most excited about?
Yeah, I mean, again, as I said before, I think my business, improving the patient's life is, I think, something that I really love. And at the same time, I really love the fact that we are innovative. We do very good quality products, and it's a growing company, and that really excites me every day. Very happy to be part of it.
Fantastic. Well, clearly you're in the right place.
I think I do. I think
Fantastic.
I am. Yeah. Yeah.
Before I let you go, this last thing, what advice would you give to, younger generation or HR leaders on their rise in their
Yeah.
journey? And then after that, where can people connect with you to reach out if they want to say hello?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they can connect me on LinkedIn, and I'll be very pleased to help wherever I can, doesn't matter on which topic. And then the other one is that I think, like this getting out of comfort zone, which is something that I've done quite a bit. Like now, for instance, I am moving to the fifth country that I'll be living in together with my kids very soon. So I got out of my comfort zone every time, and it helped me every time. It really helped with my development, helped with my learning. And then my job got more excited every time when I got out of my comfort zone. It was not easy, but it helped eventually. So that I would recommend, really. I know it's easy to say than done, but still.
You're 100% right. And for everyone listening, it's not going to feel nice. It's going to feel uncomfortable. You're going to feel scary. But those are normally the moments where you should run towards and embrace,
Absolutely.
and the most meaningful as well. Well, look, thank you so much for coming on the show. It's a real pleasure. It was
Thank you
nice to
very
see
much.
you. And for everyone listening, make sure you go and connect on LinkedIn. the link below to Seren's profile, LinkedIn profile. So click that. Apart from that, enjoy the rest of your day, and I'll look forward to chatting again soon.
Thank you very much, Chris. Thank you for inviting me.